This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by the Audio Journal. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. Hi, hello, and welcome. My name is Adam, and if you're looking for something to do this weekend, well, you have come to the right place. Over the next hour, we'll be making our way through a myriad of things, a plethora of options, a gaggle of possibilities, all of which you can do this weekend right here in Worcester County. So grab a seat, get comfy, and get ready, because this is Weekend Update. And welcome to the last week of May, or as the old Farmer's Almanac calls it, the month of maybe. Why maybe? Well, because it changes moods just like a baby, and just as often as a baby, too. I actually think May might be more fickle than March is. At least this time around, it feels that way, doesn't it? March is usually upset about something, and it gives us wildly unpredictable weather. A roller coaster of emotions, if you will. May is a bit unsettled in the early days of the month, but by the end, it usually has itself figured out, right? Not this May. This May, we've had everything from 90-degree temperatures to rain to cold, even frost. That's right, we had frost here in New Hampshire, where I live. It was mostly up in the North Country, that's the northern part of the state, the Lakes region, and parts north of that. But it didn't get chilly down here in the southern part as well, and that was just last week. That happened all in just 1 week. At least we didn't have any snow, right? Well, if you lived out in Colorado, you did. You had a couple of feet at the beginning of the month. And then all this severe weather and flooding and tornadoes in the plain states and in the south. I'm telling you, the month of May definitely has a bee or two in its bonnet this time around. Well, in any event, I hope you had an enjoyable holiday weekend, remembering those who gave the ultimate sacrifice on Memorial Day. It was a soggy one for sure, but I hope you were still able to get out to watch a parade or take part in a remembrance or two. Now, looking at the calendar, we are just about 1 month away from the 4th of July, believe it or not, and our nation's 250th birthday party. And we'll be getting ready for that here on Weekend Update starting next week. We've got some interesting bits of history to talk about, so you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for that. Today, however, we have one more date with the world of food, at least for now. You know, we always circle back to food sooner or later. This time, the most famous local sandwich in each of our 50 United States. And we'll start in alphabetical order, so that means Alabama comes first. And they are known for their chicken sandwich with white barbecue sauce. This was invented by a pitmaster in Decatur, Alabama in the 1920s before becoming popular across the rest of the state. The white barbecue sauce is made with mayonnaise, vinegar, salt, and ground black pepper. Looking at the picture, it kind of reminded me of a cream-chipped beef on a bun. That's what it looked like because the barbecue sauce was white. I'd be curious to see what it tastes like. How reminiscent is it of a regular barbecue sauce, for example? In Alaska, Alaska is known for salmon. It's said to be the freshest, pinkest salmon around. The state is actually the top producer of wild salmon in the entire world. So it makes complete sense that the favorite sandwich there is the Wild Alaskan Salmon Sandwich. It is served on a whole grain bread with what I think is either mayonnaise or cream cheese. I couldn't tell. It was a white, creamy something that was on the piece of bread. That creamy something is topped with greens, tomato slices, and then the salmon right on top. The salmon in the picture almost looked like lox to me because it's thinly sliced. I don't know if it was smoked or just thinly sliced. Couldn't quite tell. But I would think you could get it grilled or baked as a thicker fillet, too. I don't see why that would be too much of an issue. Turning next to Arizona and a sandwich called Fry Bread Tacos, or Navajo Tacos. These are basically a fried dough, a regular, ordinary fried dough, topped with traditional taco fillings like meat, beans, and cheese. It's almost like an open-faced taco, but I suppose you could fold it in half. Those fried doughs are kind of malleable that way. In Arkansas, they have a deep-fried catfish sandwich. It is caught locally and tucked between two buttered buns. This deep-fried sandwich is best paired with a side of fries and coleslaw. In the picture, the slaw was served right inside the sandwich. It actually looked like there were two different coleslaws on this sandwich, regular on top and a spicy reddish-colored slaw on the bottom. I think that would be delicious. In California, the Californians are notorious for eating healthy, so it should come as no surprise that the most famous sandwich here is the Avocado Club sandwich. It is a simple sandwich that features avocado, tomatoes, and lettuce, and something else in the picture I couldn't quite identify. My thoughts were that it's either mushrooms, onions, or grilled chicken. I think it's too big for mushrooms. It's the wrong shape for onions. It's far too thick. You wouldn't cut them like that to put on a sandwich. And it's a little bit too translucent to be grilled chicken, although it does have what appear to be grill marks on it. So it could be grilled chicken indeed. Turning next to the state of Colorado and a question. You've heard of the Denver omelet, right? Well, have you ever heard of the Denver sandwich? This is a traditional Denver omelet filled with diced ham, onions, and green bell peppers, and then stuck between pieces of toast to make a sandwich. You can even add a few slices of ham to it or a couple of hash browns as well. It sounds delicious. This is a great idea, I think. Definitely going to have put this on my list of things to try when I'm out in Colorado next, whenever that might be. A little closer to home is the state of Connecticut, the Nutmeg State. They serve what is called a Connecticut hamburger. Now, Connecticut is known for its non-traditional hamburgers, which are served on white toast, not a hamburger bun. And you get a choice of onion, tomato, or cheese, and absolutely no, under any circumstances, condiments of any kind. They do not put condiments on their hamburgers in Connecticut. And neither should you if you happen to order one there. I don't know if they would even do it for you, even if you asked nicely. In Delaware, they serve a soft shell fried crab sandwich. This is an entire soft shell crab, shell and all, served on toast with coleslaw and leafy greens. And yes, you eat the shell of the crab too. It is a soft shell. It is a bizarre thing to eat. I tried one of these when I was in New Orleans many, many years ago. It's an acquired taste. I'm going to leave it at that. In Florida, they serve a Cuban sandwich. This sandwich features generous portions of ham, roasted pork, Swiss cheese, pickles, and mustard on two slices of Cuban bread. This is one of my most favorite sandwiches. I went to college in Florida, and just down the street from my apartment was a little Cuban restaurant that made the absolute best Cuban sandwiches in the world. The woman who operated it was from Cuba, so she knew exactly what kind of ham and pork and mustard to use. It's a specific kind of those three things that makes this sandwich so delicious. It's not just any ham, it's not just any pork, it's not just any mustard. It's a specific kind of those three things, and she knew exactly how to make one. I was there all the time getting her sandwiches. They were that good. Miss that little restaurant. I wish I could get a good Cuban sandwich here in the Northeast, but I just don't think that's possible. Heading north next to Georgia, well, north of Florida anyway, to Georgia, for a fried chicken sandwich. This is something I didn't know. Georgia is the original home of Chick-fil-A. So no surprise that the most famous sandwich here is the classic fried chicken sandwich with lettuce, tomato, and a little bit of spicy mayonnaise. Sounds good to me. In Hawaii, they do a Kailua-style pork sandwich. Kailua pork is very common fare at most luaus, but the slow-roasted and shredded meat is also amazing on a sandwich. For an extra Hawaiian punch, you can have it with a pineapple coleslaw or serve it on a Hawaiian roll. In Idaho, they serve a sandwich called the Meet Your Maker. Meat is spelled M-E-A-T, that kind of meat. This is a combination of steak, Italian sausage, bacon, pepperoni, and more, all on a roll with melted cheese. If you eat one of these, you just might meet your maker. In Illinois, they are known for an open-faced sandwich that they call the horseshoe. It is made with thick-sliced toasted bread. Your choice of meat could be steak, hamburger, chicken, whatever you want. And then they top it with French fries and a secret cheesy sauce. It is almost like poutine, but in a sandwich. It does look good. It did look good. I would definitely get one of those next time I am in Illinois, whenever that might be. Heading next door to Illinois, to the state of Indiana, where the people who live there are called Hoosiers, so naturally they have a Hoosier sandwich. Indiana claims to have the best pork tenderloin in the nation. They serve their tenderloin in a Hoosier sandwich, or a breaded tenderloin on bread. Locals say that you should have it with only a few dill pickles and a little bit of mustard, but you can also get it with lettuce, tomato, and other fixings as well. In Iowa, they serve a tavern or loose meat sandwich. The sandwich is made with unseasoned ground beef, which I don't understand at all, sautéed onions, and sometimes topped with pickles, ketchup, or mustard on a bun. It's almost like a Sloppy Joe sandwich, but without the Sloppy Joe sauce. Remember, it's unseasoned ground beef. I can't imagine that tastes very well. In Kansas, they have a sandwich called Runza, or B-Rox. This is basically a bun-shaped bread pocket that they fill with beef, cabbage, or sauerkraut, onions, and seasonings. If it sounds German, well, that's because it is. It was spread by German immigrants when they came to the Midwest. In Kentucky, they have a sandwich called a hot brown. This is an open-faced sandwich with turkey and bacon covered in cheesy Mornay sauce. Mornay is made with butter, flour, cheese, milk, and egg yolks. And then the entire thing is baked or broiled until the sauce begins to brown. It sounds absolutely delicious. I've always wanted to try one. I just don't find myself in Kentucky all that often. Actually, I've only been there once, to be honest with you. I was in the southern part of the state where Mammoth Cave National Park is located. Fantastic national park. If you ever get the opportunity to visit, I highly recommend it. I visited the caves, but there really weren't any restaurants around there that served a hot brown. I kind of feel like you have to go up to Louisville to get one, and it was just too far for us to go to Louisville just to have lunch, if you know what I mean. So I didn't get to have one. On the plus side, though, I did get to see where Duncan Hines, yes, he was a real person, where he had his home and his office, though. So all was not completely lost on that trip. His home, by the way, is in Bowling Green. For those who are wondering, it is now a funeral home, so you can only see it from the outside unless you're going to a funeral service. But it's still worth a stop. It's a lovely building on the side of the road there in Bowling Green. In Louisiana, they have one of my favorite sandwiches, a po' boy. The classic po' boy, which is short for poor boy because it was made with cheap ingredients, is made with French bread and roast beef or fried seafood. A dressed po' boy has lettuce, tomato, pickles, mayonnaise, onions, and hot or regular mustard. I had one with shrimp when I was in New Orleans many years ago. They used popcorn-style shrimp, those little itty-bitty ones, so they fit nicely in the sandwich. It was delicious. There's just something about the fried shrimp and the mayonnaise and the pickles that is just absolutely divine. I hit it with a little spicy mustard just to see what that would do, and that just brought it to a whole new level. It was delicious. Heading next to the state of Maine, where they are known for their lobster rolls. No surprise there, right? Served on a lightly grilled bun and filled with steamed and buttered lobster, these sandwiches taste like summer because that's the best time to have one. Would you believe I've lived in New England all my life and I've never had a lobster roll? It's crazy, I know. Some New Englander I am, huh? Now, don't get all upset with me now. I have had lobster. It just wasn't in a roll. It was served with a roll, but it wasn't in the roll. I had lobster on Cabbage Island off the coast of Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, a few summers ago. This is Booth Bay is just north of Portland, well south of Acadia and Bar Harbor. It was freshly caught that morning and steamed to absolute perfection. It was the sweetest, most delicious lobster I've ever had. Didn't even need the butter. It was that good. But yes, I did use the butter because you kind of have to. Now, speaking of seafood, we're going to head to Maryland next for a crab cake sandwich. Maryland is known for its crabs, so it should come as no surprise that the most famous sandwich there is the crab cake sandwich, served on a buttered bun with lettuce, tomato, and onion. And let me tell you, they do not fool around with crab cakes in Maryland. It is probably If I had to guess, I would say they're 95-96% crab meat and just a little bit of filler, and that's the exact way they should be. Well, we've reached our very own state here, Massachusetts. What is our most famous sandwich? Why, it's the Fluffernutter, made with soft white bread topped with peanut butter and marshmallow fluff, which was invented by Archibald Quarry in Somerville. Thank you, Archibald. It is a childhood and adulthood staple here in Massachusetts, and it's one of my absolute favorite sandwiches of all time. I've told people who are not from New England about it, and they just don't get it. They don't understand how good the combination of peanut butter and fluff is. Now, the key to the sandwich is fluff. Now, I mentioned I was in college in Florida, and one day I happened to be craving a Fluffernutter. I had peanut butter in my kitchen, but I didn't have any fluff, so I went to the store to try to hunt some down. Well, in Florida, they don't have fluff. At least they didn't then. They do have what they call marshmallow spread, which is what I got because it was my only option. Well, I'm here to tell you that fluff and marshmallow spread are not the same thing. It's not even close. Fluff has a very distinct flavor and a very distinct texture. Marshmallow spread is nowhere even near that. It is far too sticky and far too sweet, and it just did not work in place of fluff in a Fluffernutter. It has to be fluff. Nothing else will work except fluff. So my craving wasn't satisfied, at least not until I came home for break, and I sunk my teeth into a Fluffernutter, and then all was well in the world. Turning next to Michigan, they make another one of my favorite sandwiches, corned beef. It is served with yellow mustard on a double-baked, hand-sliced Jewish rye bread. Now, when I was in college in Florida, here we go again with Florida, there was a Jewish deli down the street that made the best corned beef on rye. It was incredible. And I would pair that with a bowl of matzo ball soup. Oh, there was nothing better. I'm telling you, the best lunch. Except for the Cuban sandwich. I think those two are both on the same level, as far as I'm concerned. In Minnesota, they have a sandwich called the Juicy Lucy. This is a hamburger, but with a twist. The cheese is on the inside of the patty so that it oozes out with the first bite. Sounds good. In Mississippi, they have a strange sandwich. It is a pig ear sandwich. The sandwich consists of two tender pig ears, yes, real pig ears, served on a small bun with mustard, slaw, and hot sauce. The picture that accompanied it did not make it look all that appetizing, but I would still try it. I'm an adventurous eater. I'd give it a whirl if I'm ever in Mississippi. In Missouri, they have a Gerber sandwich, and this has nothing to do with the Gerber baby, nothing at all. This is an open-faced sandwich with French bread, garlic butter, ham, provolone cheese, and dusted with paprika, and then perfectly toasted. Sounds delicious. In Montana, they have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with huckleberry jam. Montana is known for its huckleberries. They put it in everything from jam to toothpaste to hand cream to candles to candy, you name it. The people in Montana are crazy about their huckleberries. I got to try some of them when I was in Montana a couple years ago. They look a lot like a blueberry, but they're a little bit smaller. They're a lot sweeter, and they're darker in color, too. And they were delicious. In Nebraska, they make another of my favorite sandwiches there, a Reuben. This is the most famous sandwich here in Nebraska. It is made with corned beef, sauerkraut, Swiss cheese, and Thousand Island dressing, all served on rye bread with a pickle or two on the side. In Nevada, they have a heart attack grill burger. Why do they call it that? Well, you'll understand when I tell you what's in it and how big it is. Are you ready? It has 5 burger patties, 5 of them, with bacon and cheese between each one of them, and served with a big pile of fries on the side. I've seen pictures of these kinds of burgers in Las Vegas where they put a fried egg or two between each patty as well. Talk about a heart attack on a plate. In New Hampshire, this is something I didn't know, but again, it's another one of my favorite sandwiches. It's the Monte Cristo. This is a ham and cheese sandwich that is dipped in batter and fried to a golden brown. It is usually topped with powdered sugar, and something that we take very, very, very seriously here in New Hampshire, maple syrup. We only use real maple syrup, or none at all. Simple as that. In New Jersey, they make a Jersey breakfast sandwich. This is a staple that can be found in any Garden State diner. It's thick-cut Taylor ham or pork roll with egg and American cheese on a hard Kaiser roll or a bagel. In New Mexico, they serve a cheeseburger. Now, a cheeseburger is one thing, but in New Mexico, they take it to a whole different level with the addition of green chilies. They serve the chilies both on top of the patty and inside it, too, for a little bit of a kick. In New York, they make another one of my favorites, a pastrami on rye. Katz's Deli on the Lower East Side of Manhattan is one of the best places to get one of these sandwiches. They've been making them since 1888, so you know they know how to do it right. Katz's Deli, by the way, is where the famous I'll Have What She's Having scene in When Harry Met Sally took place. They filmed it right there in the restaurant. In North Carolina, they are known for their pulled pork, but instead of the people in Hawaii, they do it their own way. They smother it in a tangy, vinegar-based barbecue sauce. It's delicious North Carolina barbecue. In North Dakota, they make a smørbrød. This is a Scandinavian open-faced sandwich commonly made with rye bread, roast beef, gravlax, which is a salmon that's similar to lox, butter, lettuce, Jarlsberg cheese, pickled herring, hard-boiled eggs, honey mustard, and cucumber. The only thing I couldn't figure out is if all of that is on one sandwich. I kind of feel like the roast beef and the pickled herring just would not go together on a sandwich, but I've never had this one, so I don't really know. In Ohio, they make a Polish boy. This is a sausage sandwich native to the city of Cleveland. It has a link of kielbasa covered with a layer of French fries, barbecue sauce or hot sauce, and coleslaw, all on a bun. In Oklahoma, they make a chicken-fried steak sandwich. This is steak that's been fried like chicken, served on a hamburger bun with your choice of condiments. Simple, but delicious. In Oregon, they make a falafel pita. Portland is known for its delicious vegan food, falafel pitas in particular. They come served with piles of veggies and a little bit of hummus as well. In Pennsylvania, this one should come as absolutely no surprise. It's the Philly cheesesteak. Simple as that. In Rhode Island, they make a dynamite sandwich. This sandwich hails from Woonsocket. It is a sloppy Joe hamburger made with onions, bell peppers, and celery. But be careful if you order one. It is spicy, as the name implies. If it's got the word dynamite in it, you know it's spicy. In South Carolina, this one I thought was a little weird. Not because I don't like this sandwich, I do, but because I would never picture it as coming from South Carolina. But that's where it was invented back in 1965, at the Woolworth's lunch counter. The sandwich is the simple, yet delicious, tuna melt. The state of South Dakota, where we're heading next, is known for a fish called the walleye. This flaky fish is fried to perfection and served on a bun or a roll. In the picture, they served it with a fruit salad, which I don't get at all. Fish and cantaloupe is not a good combination in my book. I would rather have it with a side of fries and maybe a pickle as well, but I think that cantaloupe is, that's a little bit too much. In Tennessee, they are known for their fluffernutter as well, but they do it a little bit differently than we do. They add banana and bacon to it as a tribute to the king, Elvis, and then they fry it in a pan. Sounds delicious. In Texas, they're known for their barbecue, no surprise there, so their most famous sandwich is the brisket sandwich. Barbecue brisket is the national dish of Texas. Serving it on a sandwich is just one of the many ways that they use it there. In Utah, they make a pastrami burger. This is basically a Reuben on top of a hamburger patty, all served in the same bun. I don't know about this. I like Reubens and I like hamburgers. I just don't know if I want them together in the same sandwich. You know what I mean? Might be a bit too much for me. In Vermont, they serve a sandwich called the Vermonter. It's got turkey, ham, Vermont cheddar cheese, green apples, and honey mustard. It is delicious. In Virginia, they are known for their excellent cheeses and succulent ham, especially in their most famous sandwich, a classic grilled ham and cheese. In Washington, they have a large Vietnamese community, so their most famous sandwich is the banh mi. This is a Vietnamese dish made with pâté, vegetable slaw, fish sauce, and sliced jalapeno pepper and fresh cilantro. In Washington, D.C., I know it's not a state, but it's worth mentioning, they do a chili half smoke. This is a half pork, half beef smoked sausage served on a warmed, steamed bun with mustard, onions, and spicy homemade chili sauce. In West Virginia, they like to keep it simple with an apple and turkey sandwich served with slices of cheese, lettuce, and whole grain mustard. Kind of sounds like the Vermonter, doesn't it? In Wisconsin, they like to keep it simple, too, with a sausage on a bun. Simple as that. They serve it with sauerkraut, mustard, and cheese curds, which they're also known for as well. Our last stop is the beautiful state of Wyoming. And wide open Wyoming is where the buffalo roam and occasionally appear on menus as well, like in their famous bison meatball sandwich. So there you have some of the most famous sandwiches from each of our 50 United States. Kind of a fun little thing there to start the program today. We are now headed into the weekend, so that means we've got to get our plans in order, don't we? We're going to start at Mechanics Hall. Actually, we won't because it's quiet once again this weekend. They do have a series of high school graduations, which is why there haven't been any other shows there recently. So we'll head right over to the Hanover Theater for the performing arts for a couple of shows there. Starting with the Hanover Theater, Conservatory presents their Spring Reflection 2026. This showcase reflects back on what the students have learned throughout the previous year, focusing on the proficiency, growth, and talent of the dancers. This show is Sunday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Tickets are $30 across the board and can be purchased by heading to thehanovertheater.org or by calling 877-571-7469. Blippi is coming to Worcester in this all-new show, the Be Like Blippi Tour. Get ready to see the world more curiously as you move like, play like, and explore just like Blippi. This high-energy show is packed with music, laughter, and lots of fun surprises. The brand new interactive adventure invites audience members to put on orange glasses and unlock the spark of curiosity inside us all. The show is Thursday, June 4th. That's next Thursday at 6 p.m. It runs approximately 80 minutes, and there is one intermission right in the middle. Tickets for Blippi range in price from $40 up to $90, and that is dependent on where you choose to sit in the theater. To purchase, you've got two options, thehanovertheater.org, or you can call the box office at 877-571-7469. Turning next to the Greater Worcester Opera, they are performing one of my favorite musicals, 1776. In this historically significant year, the anniversary of our country's independence, come and see the Founding Fathers battle it out for independence in one of the most impactful and beautifully crafted musicals of the 20th century. Performances are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, June 4th, 5th, and 6th at 7:30, and Sunday, June 7th at 2 p.m. And they just added an extra matinee because this musical is very popular. It has been added to Saturday's list of shows, so Saturday, June 6th at 2 p.m. Tickets are $25 for adults, $22 for seniors and students, and $15 for ages 12 and under. To purchase, head to www.greaterworcesteropera.org/events. When you get there, under the heading 2026 Season Events, you'll see an advertisement for three shows. Do not click on that advertisement because it is not a clickable picture. It is just a picture, so nothing will happen if you click on it. Instead, keep scrolling down until you get to the picture that has four rows of headshots of people in the cast. Just underneath that picture in the red box, it says Get Tickets. Click on that, and you'll be on your way. Performances of 1776 are being held at the Calliope Theater at 150 Main Street in Boylston. That said, this is not a Calliope Theater production. They're only lending their stage for use. Because of that, do not go to the Calliope Theater website or call the box office. They will not be able to help you. Again, tickets can only be purchased through the Greater Worcester Opera Company. And their website again is www.greaterworcesteropera.org/events. We'll head next to Samuel Slater's restaurant for a comedy night featuring Kevin Flynn with special guest P.J. Thibodeau and host Matt Fanikos. All three will be performing on stage on Saturday, May 30th at 7:30. The doors open at 6:30. This is an event for folks 21 years of age and older, and yes, you do need a valid ID to get in. Tickets are $20 across the board, and you can purchase those by heading to www.samuelslaters.com/events. www.samuelslaters.com/events. Or you can give them a phone call at 508-943-1639. 508-943-1639. Samuel Slater's restaurant is located at 200 Gore Road down in Webster. Turning next to Clinton, specifically the Icon Museum and Study Center there, this Saturday is Founders Day. This is a celebration of both the institution's 20th anniversary and also of its founders, Gordon and his wife Janet Langton, whose vision and generosity established one of America's most distinctive cultural institutions. Gordon and Janet have since passed away, Gordon in March of 2021 and Janet in December of 2024. The Icon Museum now holds a collection of over 1,000 Russian, Greek, Veneto-Cretan, and Ethiopian icons and objects spanning nearly 2,000 years of art. As we mentioned, Founders Day is this Saturday, May the 29th. The museum will be open from 10 a.m. until 5:30 and will feature a special one-day-only pop-up exhibition and special tours of the galleries as well. There will be a dedication ceremony at 5:30 with State Representative Megan Kilcoyne and Executive Director of the Icon Museum, Simon Morsink. At 5:45 p.m., after the dedication ceremony, there will be a piano concert by Ekaterina Villevald. Then from 6:30 until 8 p.m., there will be a reception. It won't be at the museum, though. It'll be held at the Clinton Historical Society. All of this, including the museum admission, is free to you on Saturday if you would like to attend. Nothing is required from you other than your presence. The Russian Icon Museum is located at 203 Union Street in Clinton. If you've got any questions or concerns regarding this Saturday's events or anything museum-related, you can give them a phone call at 978-598-5000. 978-598-5000. Turning next to the American Antiquarian Society here in Worcester for an interesting program. This is called Crime and Punishment, Worcester County Jail Records. In 2025, the Worcester County Sheriff's Office donated approximately 100,000 records to the American Antiquarian Society, dating mostly from 1860 until 1900. They include writs and mitimuses. These are legal documents specifying court orders or warrants or people taken into custody for a crime, as well as ledger books containing the register of prisoners confined to the Worcester Jail and solitary confinement and medical records as well. These oversized books include details such as name, age, gender, height, complexion, literacy level, and crimes committed for thousands of individuals. The records also reveal attitudes about childhood, the treatment of women and immigrants, poverty, drinking and work ethics, incarceration practices, and also a lot of things about daily life in central Massachusetts during the Civil War. All of this will be discussed in a Chat with a Curator program with curator of manuscripts Ashley Cataldo and Worcester County Sheriff Louis Evangelitis. You will also have the opportunity to peruse the records themselves and ask any questions you might have. This program is next Thursday, June the 4th, from 5 p.m. until 6:30. This is a free program to attend. However, they do require you to register if you would like to attend. To do that, head to www.AmericanAntiquarian.org, www.AmericanAntiquarian.org. When you get there, hover over Programs and Events in the menu at the top of the page. Click on Upcoming Programs and Events in the menu that drops down below that. Then scroll through the events until you come to this one. It should be the second one on the list. Then go ahead and click on it, and you'll be on your way. If you would like more information or have questions regarding this program, you can call 508-755-5221. 508-755-5221. The American Antiquarian Society is located at 185 Salisbury Street here in Worcester. Now, speaking of Worcester, the World of Foods event is happening this Monday. This event features crafts, a dominoes tournament, a scavenger hunt, street performers, family fun, a photo booth, and much, much more, including, of course, plenty of food. This is happening on Monday, June 1st, from 12 p.m. until 6 p.m. in Elm Park, here in Worcester. And the best part? This event is completely free to attend. No ticket or registration required. There is a May reception coming up for Arts Worcester. This is a celebration of three new exhibitions at Arts Worcester. In the West Gallery, solo exhibitions Bridie McGlynn, Expanded Bodies, and Caitlin Marsh, Lithological, are installed side by side and complement one another with color palettes and themes of humanity. Expanded Bodies is a series of abstracted acrylic works that reference the human body to explore perception and contours of material and the self. Lithological considers concepts of power and fragility of earth, its materials, and mankind. And again, those two are side by side each other in the West Gallery. In the East Gallery is an exhibition called Still, a juried exhibition. This one takes inspiration from a classic genre, the still life. Some still lifes are traditional and some are reimagined in content and medium. Artworks on display were chosen by Rachel Pazzanante, who was the assistant director and collections manager at the Danforth Art Museum out in Framingham. The reception is on Friday, May 29th from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m., and it is free and open to anyone who would like to attend. As part of the evening, there will be a cash bar as well. After this, all three exhibitions will be on view during regular gallery hours, which are Wednesday through Sunday from 12 p.m. until 5 p.m., and they will be on view until June 21st. The gallery is also free to attend as well. Arts Worcester is located at 44 Portland Street in Worcester. If you've got any questions about either the reception or any of the exhibitions or anything Arts Worcester related, you can give them a phone call at 508-755-5142. 508-755-5142. Our next stop takes us to Clark University and a walk to defeat ALS. This is a powerful community event uniting families, friends, caregivers, and advocates in the fight against ALS, which stands for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. It's also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. This annual walk is a community fundraising event bringing people together to raise awareness, honor those we've lost, support those living with ALS today, and fuel critical research toward treatments and a cure. This walk is on Saturday, May the 30th from 11:15 a.m. until 1 p.m. at Clark University at 950 Main Street in Worcester. Now, there was no information regarding registration or donations given as part of this advertisement, so my best guess is that you'll find all of that out when you get there. There are two historical events coming up. Both sound very interesting. The first one is in Worcester. It is a Worcester Revolutionary Walking Tour. Walk Main Street in the footsteps of Worcester's revolutionaries as they force local defenders of royal government to walk a gauntlet of common men intent on defending their liberty as they spread their revolutionary ideas between the town's taverns and meeting house. This walk is Saturday, May the 30th from 1 p.m. until 2 p.m. The tour starts and ends at the Salisbury Mansion, located at 40 Highland Street. If you do decide to go, make sure to wear comfortable shoes. You will be doing a lot of walking in that one-hour time frame. Tickets are $15 for non-members and free for members of the Worcester History Museum. To register, head to www.worcesterhistory.org/events. www.worcesterhistory.org/events. And then scroll down through the events until you come to this one. Click on it, and you'll be on your way. You can also call the organizer of the event. Her name is Eleanor Hubre. Her telephone number is 508-753-8278. 508-753-8278. And again, her name is Eleanor Hubre. If there is inclement weather this Saturday, the tour will still be presented, but it'll be in the Fletcher Auditorium at the Museum of Worcester instead. Now, if you can't make this Saturday's tour, but you're still interested in going on a tour, there are two more coming up. The first one is Saturday, June the 6th. The second is Saturday, June the 20th. Both of them are at 1 p.m., and you can register for any of these tours when you go to www.worcesterhistory.org/events. www.worcesterhistory.org/events. Or you can also call Eleanor, and her telephone number again is 508-753-8276. 508-753-8276. The other historical event is out in Upton, and it is being presented by the Historical Society in Upton, and it is a bus tour to the historic 1788 10-footer boot shop. The Upton Historical Society invites the public to step back in time with a special narrated bus tour to one of Upton's earliest surviving workshop buildings, the 1788 Seth Wood Boot Shop and the Old First Cemetery, founded in 1735. Interpreters will be on site to tell the stories of these two locations. The tour will take place on Sunday, May 31st, with buses departing from the Upton Town Hall parking lot at two different times, 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. That means there are two different tours. Each tour will include a short narrated bus ride and a visit to the historical building where participants will learn about Upton's important role in New England's early boot-making industry. The Seth Wood Boot Shop, built in 1788, is a small independent workshop where artisans crafted boots in a structure known as a 10-footer. Measuring roughly 10 feet by 10 feet, these buildings were a defining feature of early New England's cottage industries. Craftsmen worked close to home, producing goods for larger merchants long before the rise of industrial factories, and providing boots to the Deep South during the American Reformation following the American Civil War. During the 19th century, Upton was a major contributor to the regional boot and shoe trade, producing a significant portion of the footwear used throughout New England. The building later took on a second life in 1938 when it was converted into a blacksmith shop by Clarence Forsberg. The Forsberg family eventually donated the historic structure to the Upton Historical Society, helping preserve this unique piece of the town's industrial heritage. Today, the restored shop offers a rare glimpse into the early working life of Upton's craftsmen and the small structures that supported a thriving local economy. Now, if you're interested in going on the tour, again, you've got two to choose from, 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. on Sunday, May 31st. You will need a ticket. Tickets for the bus tour are just $5 per person. And because seating is limited on those buses, reservations are highly recommended. To reserve a seat, you can call 508-529-6600. 508-529-6600. Turning next to Polar Park, we've got no baseball on tap for this weekend. Your Woo Sox are out of town, but we'll get to that in just a moment. This Sunday is May Day, as in Drake May, the quarterback of the New England Patriots. And he is throwing a celebrity softball classic. Join Drake May and his wife Ann Michael May for the inaugural May Day Family Foundation Celebrity Softball Classic. Watch Drake, his New England Patriots teammates, and a lineup of celebrity guests take the field in support of a meaningful cause. The evening will feature an exciting home run derby, interactive family-friendly activities, and post-game festivities you won't want to miss. This is all happening on Sunday, May 31st. The doors open at 5 p.m. Single seats and general admission seating are the only seats that are available as of now. Drink rail seats, high top tables, and field level seats, those are all sold out. Tickets are $15 a piece for single seats and general admission, and they allow you to sit in one of the following locations: any Adirondack chair on the University Dental Berm, any red stool throughout the concourse, in the triple decker garden, on the Surfside Sun Deck, in the Shaw's Home Bullpen Terrace, in the Shaw's Visiting Bullpen Terrace, in the newly renovated Hanover Deck, on the bridge, or in the FlexCon Landing. To purchase your ticket to May Day this Sunday, you can head to www.polarpark.com. www.polarpark.com. Your Woo Sox are out of town. They are down in Scranton, Pennsylvania, taking on the Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders for the rest of this week. They will be home next week, starting on Tuesday, and they'll be taking on the visiting Buffalo Bisons. The game is Tuesday, June 2nd at 6.05 p.m. That is first pitch. This is the start of Peanut Allergy Friendly Week at Polar Park, so no peanuts will be found in Polar Park this week. It is Tail Wagon Tuesday, so if you've got a favorite pup that you'd like to bring along with you, this is your opportunity to do just that. It is also Taco and Tequila Tuesday, so remember to stop by the Nacho and Ice Cream Stand on the third base concourse to get your Whopping Walking Taco and a margarita for just $15. It is ALS Awareness Night. It is also AARP Ticket Tuesday. That means that if you're a member of the AARP, you've got two free tickets waiting for you at every Tuesday home game. Simply stop by the Gate D ticket office with your AARP membership card to pick those two tickets up. On Wednesday, June 3rd, the Buffalo Bisons are back in town for a game at 11.05 a.m. Peanut Allergy Friendly Week continues at Polar Park. It is also AbbVie STEM Day, and STEM, of course, is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It is also National Grid First Responder Wednesday, and there will be a player meet and greet. You can meet a couple of Woo Sox players for autographs and photographs. They will be in the DCU Club after the game. Then on Thursday, June 4th, your Buffalo Bisons, your Woo Sox will be taking on the Buffalo Bisons at 6.05 p.m. Peanut Allergy Friendly Week continues. And then they're doing an event that I always thought was strange. And I know they try this every once in a while, so they must have some kind of success with it. But it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I'm speaking, of course, of Purr in the Park. instead of bringing your canine to tonight's game, you can bring your feline with you. Although I'm not sure that cats are all that into baseball. I have three cats, and they definitely aren't. They couldn't care less about baseball. They actually couldn't care less about any other cats either, so I would not bring them with me to the game. But if you've got a baseball-loving kitty at home that you think would like to join you at a baseball game, this is your opportunity to try it out and see what happens. They are also offering a promotion called Deuces Wild. Every Thursday evening game, you can enjoy 12-ounce pours of Coors Light and Masshole Light Lager for just $2. You can also get hot dogs for $2 and water for $2 as well. It is also Town Takeover Night over at Polar Park. They will be celebrating all things Uxbridge on Thursday night. And it is also Greek Heritage Night, so expect lots of good Greek food and music as well. After this, your WooSox have three more games next weekend against the visiting Buffalo Bisons. We'll talk more about those next week. Your WooSox then hit the road for a two-week road trip. Their first stop is Rochester, New York, and then they will finish their trip in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. That means they won't be home until June 23rd when they take on the visiting Toledo Mudhens. And we'll talk more about those games when the time comes. For now, to purchase your ticket to any WooSox home game, you have several options. You can head to www.milb.com/Worcester. You can head to www.polarpark.com. You can visit the box office in person if you happen to be in the neighborhood. That neighborhood is 100 Madison Street. Or you could always give the box office a good old-fashioned ringy-dingy at 508-500-1000. That's 508-500-1000. Well, we've got some time left, so I thought we'd finish where we started today, and that is with food. I have a recipe for a delicious summer cobbler that has only two ingredients, and it's super easy to make. To make it, you'll need individual ramekins or a baking dish to make the cobbler in. Fill each vessel of your choosing about 3/4 full with frozen berries. And any kind of berry will do, or even a mix of berries. Sometimes you can get a frozen mix that would work beautifully in this cobbler. And you don't even need to thaw them out either. The oven is going to do that for you. Then, using your favorite flavor of store-bought cookie dough, place pre-portioned cookie dough right on top of the berries. Pop the whole thing in a 325-degree oven for about half an hour, or until the berries are jammy and the cookie is baked through. To serve, you can top your cobbler with a scoop or two of vanilla ice cream or a little bit of whipped cream for a delicious summer treat. And feel free to experiment with this cobbler. You could add things like a squeeze of lemon juice or a sprinkle of brown sugar to amplify the flavors. Instead of frozen berries, try frozen peaches and top it with a butter cookie dough. I think that would be delicious. You could also add things like nuts to your cobbler as well, or maybe a few chocolate chips here and there. Almonds would pair well with a cherry cobbler, for example, and pecans would work with peaches. The possibilities here are endless, so get creative and see what you can come up with. Whatever cobbler you decide to make probably won't last all that long, but if you do happen to have any leftovers, you can wrap them tightly in plastic wrap and store them in the refrigerator for up to 3 days. Or, even better, you could store them in the freezer for the whole summer and have yourself some dessert on demand. Well, there's that familiar tune again, and you know what that means. It means that our time together has come to an end. Next week, we'll begin getting ready for our nation's 250th birthday with a story that takes place here in New Hampshire and features an uprising that happened long before the Boston Tea Party. What were the residents protesting? Well, you just have to tune in next week to find out. Until then, thanks for hanging out with me for the past hour. It is always appreciated and always a pleasure. Have a great rest of your day and get out and do something fun. Head to a concert, tickle your funny bone at a comedy show, walk in the Revolutionary's footsteps. take a bus tour, cheer on your Woo Sox, or make yourself a good old-fashioned fluffernutter. After all, a fluffernutter is a lot like life. It starts out sweet, gets messy fast, and somehow ends up on your elbow. Happens to me every time, and I have no idea how, but it does. Enjoy your fluffernutter, and I'll see you next time on Weekend Update. Weekend Update has been a production of the Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Programming is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or in Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can always go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or your Android device. If you know of an upcoming event, or you have a question or a suggestion or a comment about anything you've heard here, you can always reach me at weekendupdate@yahoo.com. That's weekendupdate@yahoo.com. My name is Adam. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day. And join me again next week for another edition of Weekend Update.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, is your best source for news, information, and entertainment for individuals who are blind or otherwise unable to access print material. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like to know our broadcast schedule, go to the Audio Journal website at www.audiojournal.org or contact us and we'll gladly send you a large print or Braille program guide. Call 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal connects listeners to their local communities. Have you heard the news? Make sure everyone knows you heard it on Audio Journal.
This is your Better Business Bureau with our tip of the week. It's always a good idea to think carefully about how you're going to pay for a purchase. Credit cards have significant fraud protection, but some payment methods don't. Wiring money is risky because it's nearly impossible to get your money back. That's also true for reloadable cards and gift cards. Scammers want you to pay in a way that's quick and makes it hard for you to get your money back. Scammers may also tell you to send money through a mobile payment app. If you get an unexpected email or text message that asks you to send money, don't click on any links. Log into the app to see if you have any requests for money. If you don't, the email or text is probably a phishing scam. If you sent money to a scammer, report it to the mobile payment app and ask to reverse the transaction right away. Remember to call BBB if you suspect a scam or want to report a scam, even if you don't lose money. Your scam report will help prevent additional victims. Our toll-free number is 1-866-566-9222.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is All That Is Gold Does Not Glitter by J.R.R. Tolkien. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken, a light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be the blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal, and read by me, Nikki Whichello. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.
listen to audio journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station audio journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, play radio station audio journal on TuneIn.